Over the weekend, Congressman Cleaver hosted a town hall meeting addressing questions and concerns about President Trump's travel ban.
President Donald Trump said over and over and over again during his campaign and since that he intended to repeal DACA. The reversal of DACA, in my estimation, sends a very clear signal to people all around the world that the United States is about the business of building bogus borders, things to separate people. Everybody in this room is an immigrant.
Congressman Cleaver and a panel of guests addressed questions from the community, and the room was packed. More than 500 people attended. People asked questions about what the order could mean for them and their families. And for a while there, things got pretty heated. Members of the Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance broke out in protest.
Okay, sir. Well, thank you. We really enjoyed that. You're disrupting us for hundreds and hundreds of people. Thank you. Well, we've had enough of that.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to find out what it's like not to just be undocumented in Missouri, but to be part of a Mexican-American family right now in our region, facing a new presidential administration. Our guests have been fielding calls from people who aren't sure what the new administration's policies might mean for them. Jessica Piedra is an immigration lawyer. Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
And Alfonso Navarro is with us as well. He's the head consul of Mexico in Kansas City. The consulate here in town serves Kansas, Missouri, and western Oklahoma, so a pretty broad swath of the Midwest. Hi, Alfonso.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you.
So we're going to start generally. What kinds of things are you guys hearing from people? I mean, what sort of, broadly, do Mexican immigrants in our region have questions about? I'll start with you, Alfonso.
Yes, thank you very much. Right now we are hearing people are expressing concern, particularly anxiety, because there are most of the politics of public policy announced is just executive orders that have to transform into actions of local authorities, and that's the tricky part, because people just heard that there is a new executive order regarding let's say immigration. Enforcement in local cities, but so far we haven't heard word from the authorities, from the city council or the police department or the sheriff's authorities. So people is constantly coming to the consulate to see what is going to happen, what should I do. So that's a part of the efforts that we are currently making in order to provide accurate information to the Mexican or the Mexican-American community living here in the Kansas City metro area, but also in the state of Kansas and the Missouri.
Do you find that people are coming just in response to a lot of unknown, or have people been getting a lot of misinformation in the absence of there being sort of easy to access correct information?
There's been misinformation since last November, since the election day, because many people thought that after the election, the November 9th, there will be new policies and new actions from a government that actually was supposed to take office on January. So that was the first part of the work that we started to do, to give information to the public regarding a national call center that we have to receive accurate information, particularly to stress out that the current policies of the past administration were still valid and there were not new policies. Because it is not only the uncertainty or the lack of information, but also the opportunity of abuse because of notary fraud or fake immigration lawyers that make offer to the specific population some fake immigration relief,
So
if they pay some money, for instance.
In this kind of environment, it's easy to sort of play on people's fears and pretend to help them when maybe that's not what you're doing. Is that the situation?
Yes. So we are in. We also provide information regarding how to avoid this kind of scams or even immigration fraud. Because sometimes people even submit paperwork that is not properly completed, and that may have obviously very bad consequences for immigrants, even those who are eligible for some kind of benefit. So we are working, not now, it's been a long tradition of the Mexican consulates in the United States working with a group of lawyers in every jurisdiction, in every consular district, that they are immigration lawyers, labor law lawyers, family lawyers that may provide initial advice, but also to continue to take care of a specific case to guarantee the best result possible for every specific case.
Jessica, what about you? What are the general like categories of concerns you're hearing from people?
Yes, well, folks are concerned because of the tone of the entire election, time leading up to the election. And so we're seeing that the new president is making good on several of the things that he promised to do. And so that's why folks are concerned. The refugee ban got most of the press over the weekend, and rightly so. It was a very chaotic weekend. But at the same time, he signed two other executive orders that got a lot of press in the Spanish media about building the wall, hiring 10,000 new enforcement agents. There's been also a lot of executive orders that have not been signed that have been floated out that are causing concern that would be even more harsh consequences for our community. So it's hard even as an attorney to keep up with what is actually happening and what
this is
just proposed to be happening. Really the first time in my 17 years being involved in immigration law, we had an emergency conference call on Friday afternoon of the attorneys just to talk about what can we expect? What can we do? How can we organize ourselves to help the community in the best way that we can to reduce the confusion?
What did come out of that conversation? Did you have any breakthroughs about what was sort of the most urgent need?
Well, what we're doing is dusting off some of the raid response plans we had during the Bush administration. George W. Bush was famous for doing large enforcement efforts that were very showy, usually at meatpacking plants or something like that, where they would arrest a lot of people at once. And there was not a lot of due process. So lawyers, that's what we really care most about, is that whatever the law is, that we're following it. That's what we're gearing up to work on. And so that's what we're concerned about, again, that there will be a lot more enforcement. And so so that there isn't mass chaos the way that there was with the refugee rollout, we're trying to get ahead of whatever action is going to be taken and get good information out to the community.
So how do the questions that you're receiving compare with the questions people contacted you to ask, say, a year ago? I mean, I'm guessing that some questions are kind of perennial, things that immigrant communities always need assistance with, need guidance on. And it's maybe hard to tease out the difference between those questions and questions that are arising right now in response to a new administration.
Yeah, I would say it's a matter of volume. We regularly, we operate on a daily basis at the consulate. We receive several, we have about up to 200 people every day at the consulate submitting paperwork for getting passports, consular IDs, birth registration for those kids born here and also entitled to Mexican nationality. And that's like a regular operation. But now with this, under the current circumstances, people is going to the consulate to get information or to try to be prepared. For instance, in the case of birth registration, if those kids born here entitled to Mexican nationality, people are taking like a preventive measures in order to be prepared in case they need I mean, they decide to return to Mexico, or should any deportation happen. So people, it's more, it's they have the pulse of what is happening. They suspect that they might be prepared, but also we are we've been sending out information, conveying specific messages through local media, particularly the Spanish media, regarding those services available in order to be prepared. So we have noticed that it's, there are more people coming in and asking for advice, or even to be referred to the lawyers with which we work at the consulate.
Jessica, what about you? I mean, what's new in the requests and the questions you're receiving now?
Well, sure. A year ago, we thought that Obama's executive order giving deferred action to parents was going to still had a possibility of happening. And so
explain that deferred action for parents.
Yeah. So on November 20th, 2014, once it was clear that comprehensive immigration reform was not going to pass the Congress, they were not going to vote on it, the president went ahead and announced a program that would have benefited parents of U.S. citizen children, and so that would have been similar to the DACA program, where if they had been here for 5 years, had a U.S. citizen or permanent resident child, and no serious criminal issues, they could come forward, be screened, so we know who they are, and obtain a legal legal presence in the U.S. and be able to live their lives without being afraid of having to take their U.S. citizen children with them should they be deported. And so about a year ago, I was busy doing workshops to prepare folks to apply for that, and again trying to avoid fraud, because actually good news and bad news spurs fraud in the immigrant community of people that want to take advantage, and that's a huge problem. And so we were trying to get good information out, kind of similarly, that there were no detailed rules yet to get that message out. Once the election happened, that shifted to that was no longer a reality, that was going to happen. And people started looking for other options if they had them, and taking action to move to maybe a little quicker than they had planned. It costs a lot of money to become a permanent resident or to get legal status in the U.S. And so they had been waiting to save up money, but then it became urgent. Now we're doing a lot more talk about what to do if you are detained, and how to make a plan for your family.
What, make a plan for your family? Explain that.
Honestly, we are now gearing up workshops to have these raid response plans, where we did this in the early 2000s, where people have powers of attorney for who's going to pick up your child from school if you're detained. You know, what if mommy doesn't come home at night, to know, you know, who to call, who's the attorney that you can contact to locate that loved one in the detention center, who's going to try to post the bond if that's even available, where that's unclear at this point, if we're going to be able to return those parents to their homes. You know, those kinds of things, that it's a very serious, unfortunately, not nearly as happy law practice at this point.
What about local news? I mean, Kansas and Missouri lawmakers are getting wrapped up in this, from Cleaver's town hall meeting and the protests that erupted there, which we heard a little while ago, to Kobach issuing immigration bills calling on Highway Patrol to assist in deportations.
Yes, immigration, since we've not had comprehensive immigration reform, really this is a failure of Congress to fix this problem for decades. Most of our Mexican-American immigrant families in Kansas City have been here 10, 20 years. They're members of our community that have been waiting and waiting for some kind of solution from the federal Congress. Therefore, the states have taken action in lieu of that, in both directions. We've had some good laws in Kansas. You know, with Mr. Kobach, has been the source of most negative actions towards our community. And
well, and I'm sure that there are probably listeners who support those laws.
That's true, yes.
And have their reasons for that. And we'll address that. But go ahead and explain maybe, a little bit more of what you were getting
at. Yes, that caused fear, I guess. That's a more neutral statement, that some of the laws that would be more restrictive. You know, from our point of view, we see any local law enforcement involved in immigration as something that makes all of us less safe. If immigrants are afraid to call the police when they are victims of crime, then that allows criminals to continue their activities with impunity, and very well could impact all of us, where we could be getting those criminals off the street. So that's the argument against local law enforcement. I think the latest idea is that the Highway Patrol would help to enforce immigration laws. On Missouri side, they're trying to make it additional criminal penalties for certain immigration violations, which I don't think is constitutional, but they keep trying to do that.
How would that affect people who you've been talking with? I mean, how does that affect the kind of guidance you give people when they talk to you?
You know, it just ratchets up the fear. And again, you know, this is most of the families in Kansas City and our mixed status is something that's important to remember. Again, I think people that aren't part of this community think of entire families as being newly arrived, you know, all undocumented, not speaking English, when that's really not the case. I mean, my own husband was undocumented for several years, and it took us, you know, 3 years, including a full year of him being stuck in Mexico, for us to be able to get him a legal status. And, you know, I always say he looked the same when he was undocumented and when he had a green card, and when he becomes a citizen, he'll look like the same guy. So I don't know that the typical undocumented immigrant is somebody that, you know, that folks think about. And again, if they're unsafe and feel that really makes all of us unsafe.
What are your thoughts on that, Alfonso?
Yeah, well, we are certainly monitoring this new development in the state of Kansas. As Mexican consul here in this part of the country, I'm respectful of the lawmaking process of this country, and particularly the state of Kansas. But given my background, I served my country in Phoenix, Arizona, back in 2010. So we have seen this story of local enforcement efforts on immigration. And on my experience, I recall it created great uncertainty in communities in Maricopa County in Arizona. And then there was this federal litigation that proved to be very harmful for the state of Arizona in terms of not receiving, you know, international conferences, conventions, but also in terms, as Jessica was mentioning, the impact that this had on mixed status families, because it's very difficult for a law enforcement official on the ground to have a clear to be able to define if the person that he just pulled over just because he looks Mexican is actually a Mexican American citizen or a legal permanent resident or is with a work visa, or is actually an undocumented person. So on discussions that I have with local and state authorities in Kansas, I have stressed out this idea of that we are respectful of the local law, but also we are vigilant on the due process of law is observed.
It sounds like you're also concerned about profiling.
It's a concern, particularly it creates situations in which a due process of law is not observed.
You know, I'm curious about why it is, when you say that most families here are of mixed status, why is that?
Well, for instance, one clear example is the DACA beneficiaries. You have families living here that when they immigrated, maybe a father or the mother are undocumented, but then they have children born here, and maybe the older brother or sister just immigrated with the parents on undocumented status, or they overstayed their visas. So you have the brothers and sisters maybe attending high school and then pursuing university, but one of the brothers or sisters is not with a legal status that allows him to pursue also his dreams. So that's a mixed status family, and maybe some were able to get some immigration relief 20, 25 years back, but the other people was not eligible for that.
Alfonso, you know, you are a Mexican consul. You work here in Kansas City, but you work for the Mexican government essentially, right?
Yes.
I'm guessing, you know, as a person living in the United States who comes from Mexico and whose job it is to uphold the rule of law on both sides of the border, I wonder, I mean, there are probably, this is such, everything going on right now is so polarizing. People see usually one side of the issue and not the other. And it seems like in your position, can you help us maybe, is there some gap in understanding that you think the two sides have that you might be able to help us out with?
Well, maybe I'm not the most qualified person to do that. I just want to stress out that the work, the nature of the work that I do here, that I perform here, is based on international treaties. And this is very difficult to grab sometimes, but there's a treaty 50 years back, the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, that allows countries like U.S. or Mexico to have representatives of that specific country in the other country's soil to protect their citizens and also to promote trade and basically to foster the good relationships between countries. So under the current circumstances, our main duty is to protect the rights and promote the rights of Mexican nationals living here, regardless of their immigration status.
How did you get into the work you do? I mean, what made you want to represent the Mexican government and Mexican nationals here in the U.S.?
Well, I'm a career diplomat, so I've been serving my country for 23 years. So this is a vocation, but it's a long-term commitment professionally and also personally. And I guess in diplomacy, one of the most rewarding works of jobs is particularly serving your nationals abroad, particularly those that are vulnerable or those that are maybe facing some form of disgrace while living or traveling abroad.
You know, one of the areas which we've touched on where everyone seems to have a lot of legal questions going forward is education. There's a program which we've referred to called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. Can you explain the nuts and bolts of DACA very quickly before we get into the future of the law?
Yes. excuse me. This is, again, based on a failure of Congress to act. The DREAM Act was introduced in 2001 in the federal Congress that would address this very issue that the consul referred to. Many of these young people came with their parents when they were very small and have lived their entire life in the U.S. And then once they become 18 or even 16 and want to do normal teenage things like drive a car or go to college, they are blocked. And so a law was introduced to give them permanent residence based on graduating from high school and attending college, but that never passed. So in 2012, anticipating comprehensive immigration reform, President Obama announced a temporary program that would give these young people a deferred action, which means protection from deportation, and a work permit if they fit that criteria.
A lot of universities across the country, including some in our area, are posting advice to students on their websites. And I noticed that UC Berkeley is telling students who have not yet applied for DACA that they might want to hold off for now rather than providing their information, given uncertainty about what's coming. But they're encouraging students wanting to renew DACA status, which I guess you have to do every 2 years, to hurry up and do it fast. Is that your advice as well?
Yes, that is the general advice nationally. Unfortunately, another campaign promise was to cancel the program and to actually look for these students as the caution on applying for the first time. There is an executive order that has not yet been signed that would cancel the DACA program, but would allow the students to continue with their work permits they have that are valid for 2 years. And so that's the concern and the rush to hurry up and renew if it's time.
With talk of deportations on the table, could the information gleaned from DACA applications be used against students and their families?
It's a possibility. I mean, the federal government has all of that's the gist of the program, is that they've come forward and given all of their information, submitted to fingerprinting and criminal background checks. And so that's the fear. I don't think that's going to happen because the students are very organized politically. And I think that we've seen over the last couple of weeks that Americans want fair immigration policy, but not arbitrary immigration policy.
We've got to take a break, but when KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll focus in on education with a student and KCUR's education reporter if uncertainty in U.S. Mexico immigration policy could affect you personally. Call us up and tell us what's going on. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with an immigration lawyer in Kansas City's head Mexican consul about what's going on for local Mexican Americans right now. We're going to zero in on education for a while. I'm joined by a student at the Kansas City, Kansas Community College who's here as part of DACA, meaning, as we just learned, she came to the U.S. as a child and has permission in two-year increments to stay. Lisandra Garcia, good morning.
Good morning.
I realize there may be limits to how much you can share about your family, but when and how did you come to the U.S.?
I came at the age of 7. I crossed the border, through the desert, through a river, as I can recall, in a trailer, and arrived here in Kansas City, and we have been here for 12 years.
How much do you remember about that journey?
I remember some parts of it. It's kind of blurry in my mind. I don't remember everything chronologically. I do remember parts of people saying, please be quiet, don't make any noise, you guys stay here, don't get out of the hotel, and me asking my mom, can I go swimming? And she said, no, they can arrest us if they see us. It's just blurry in my mind.
What do you know or are you able to share about why your family left?
Well, I know that we came here for a better life. My parents were fleeing poverty in our country. They just wanted a progress, and they saw that they had that opportunity here in the United States.
What did you think of what was happening during that journey? I mean, for you, it was maybe about swimming or not swimming, but were you scared, excited, confused?
I was very confused. Again, I was younger, and all I knew that we were, all I knew was that we were coming to El Norte, is what they called it, the north side. And for me, it was just a long journey of walking and being really quiet. Most of it was just confusing, and I was scared at some points, but that's all I can remember.
How is it that you came to land in Kansas City?
Well, my dad is here on a work visa, and he was working here with a company in Kansas City, and that's what we came to pursue, for our family to be together, because it was separated for so long, and for our family to be together and be just here with my dad.
Tell me about your education as a kid here in Kansas City.
Well, I started here in the second grade, and I recall going back home crying because, Mom, I don't understand what the teacher's saying, and I can't do my homework, and my parents couldn't help me because they didn't know English at all or very well. And, I've overcome the obstacle of the, language barriers, and
just by immersion, you figured out how to...
It took maybe 2 years for me to be able to understand completely the language, and then just practice at school, some practice at home to just become fluent in reading, writing, just speaking, understanding.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, my parents always told me you have good characteristics to be a judge, and I can see you being a lawyer. So I guess I just thought all my life that I would be a lawyer, and I'll be an attorney, hopefully.
What is it that you're studying right now?
I'm enrolled in the pre-law program at KCKCC.
So, and you're there as part of DACA, which we've talked about. When did you find out about DACA? How old were you?
I was 15 years old. My dad came home and he said, did you hear what the president announced? So we turned on the TV and it was the day of my 15th birthday. So it was a big deal. And they said that, you know, we could work and that we could have a social security and that we would be able to pursue careers. And that was amazing to me.
So what was the process of applying and qualifying like? I mean, I read some of the specific requirements, and it sounds in some ways like the process of getting your license plates renewed, but like times like 50. I mean, I think you have to be pretty organized to pull this thing together.
Oh, yes. It was very frustrating from saying that we had to have, documents from school, we had to have background checks, we had to have our criminal records, and just going to all these different places. I also had to visit the council to get my passport, like as an ID, because as not being a citizen, I had no state ID. So I had a different, I've gotten my license, and it's like getting my license 20 times in 1 week, just waiting at the DMV. That's basically what it felt like.
So when it was all done, I mean, you were able to enroll in this pre-law program. How far into the program are you now?
This is my third semester.
How far do you have yet to go?
A couple years, I want to say.
So what are you thinking now with a new presidential administration and people talking with some uncertainty about the future of DACA? I mean, it's still the law right now. We just don't know whether it will remain that way.
I want to keep hopeful and say that the administration won't take DACA away. And if they do, hopefully it's to advance it and hopefully get us, residency, citizenship. I just want to look at it from a hopeful point of view. But if it were to, if they were to take it away, then it'd be like starting from scratch all over.
What would you say to someone who might say, like, well, yeah, it sounds like you've worked really, really hard, but you and your family didn't come here through a legal process? What would you say to someone who feels that way about it?
Well, that's, I guess it's true. We came here illegally, we're undocumented, but I have worked really hard. My family has worked really hard to open their own business. Me in college, I have friends that are citizens, and I know that they've dropped out of high school. They've, gotten pregnant, just didn't care about their education. And I just try to reflect the hard work of my family and me to take that mentality away. And that's all I can do, is just work hard and try for that to reflect. That's all I can do.
I want to bring Sam Zeff in on this. He's the education reporter here at KCUR. Hi, Sam.
Morning, Gina.
What's going on in Kansas and Missouri colleges and universities? I mean, are they supporting students like Lisandra right now?
Well, you have quite a bit a different approach in both Missouri and Kansas. Missouri, a couple of years ago, took away in-state tuition from DACA students. They're not eligible for many state-sponsored school scholarships. Indeed, if you're a DACA student, you come out of a Missouri high school, you not only have to pay out-of-state tuition, you actually pay international tuition, which is really expensive. There are groups, including folks who work with UMKC, who have gone out to find scholarship money to keep those tuition costs down. In Kansas, you can still get in-state tuition. And indeed, I did a story a few months ago about how aggressively Kansas State University has gone out to recruit DACA students and undocumented students. At the time, Kirk Schultz was the president. He's since gone on to Kansas, to Washington State, said, you know what, this is an American dream. We're a land-grant university. And if we can't help people achieve the American dream, then what are we doing? And I think that the practical aspect from what Kansas State has said is that these students are going to succeed. And one of them is going to, many of them, will have a very successful career, and I'll be interested to see who's the first one to write a $1 million check to Kansas State.
So he's hoping that that's going to pay itself off, I guess. But I'm curious about whether and how those efforts are continuing right now.
You know, I think that everybody is waiting, and the advice that we've heard around this table today is that there is a wait-and-see attitude. No bureaucracy turns on a dime, and we need to see exactly what's going to happen. I will say, though, it is, as this immigration order rolled out, that all of the Kansas State Region schools showed support for their international students. Richard Myers is the new president at Kansas State. You might remember that he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He has an enormous amount of international and government experience. And he put out a statement saying, you know, these international students, whatever their status, adds to the fabric of what we have here at Kansas State. So right now, nobody is changing anything for the good or the bad. There's nothing changing in the state of Missouri either, but nothing has changed in the state of Kansas. I think Kansas State is still out there aggressively recruiting these students. KU has put out a statement supporting their international students and faculty.
What about in high schools? I mean, what have you found in your reporting there on undocumented students who might have assumed that DACA was going to be there for them as they moved beyond high school?
There is. I just did a story not long ago, wrote a story out of East High School in Kansas City, talked to a couple of DACA students there. And they're being advised by their advisors within the school and the school district to just remain calm. Let's see what's going to happen and then move forward from there. I don't think that I think there was some initial panic. I think some of that has, from what I've reported, has subsided a little bit. But as we know, these executive orders can come very fast and very furious. So we don't really know what's going to happen. But right now, the counsel is stay calm. Let's see what's going to happen.
Lisandra, one of the things that teachers were telling Sam in the stories that he's been doing is that students, undocumented students, have maybe not been trying as hard since the election because they suspect that the opportunities may not be there for them. And adults have been known to misread teenagers. So I'm curious, you know, you being someone who's much closer to that actual experience in a lot of ways, what you think might be going on for people like you just a couple years younger?
Well, imagine just you know, the government, I mean, the government telling you that you have a chance and that you can pursue your dream. And then all of a sudden, someone new comes in and saying, I'm going to get rid of it. And so your hopes just go down all of a sudden. And it's a little bit of, I guess, uncertainty too. Do I keep working? Do I gather my stuff and try to find for a university in Mexico or Canada or in another country? It's just, what do I do now kind of thing.
Lisandra, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And Sam Zeff, thank you.
My pleasure, Gina.
When KCUR Central Standard returns, we'll bring the former CEO of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in on this discussion as we move beyond education. How political uncertainty is affecting business, economics, family finances, and health, coming right up. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking about how the uncertainty around national immigration policy is affecting Mexican-American immigrants in and around Kansas City. I'd like to introduce Michael Barrera. He's with us from the Libre Institute, where he's the Director of Entrepreneurship and Financial Health. He used to be the CEO of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Michael, hello.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Do you want to respond to anything you've already heard in today's discussion?
Well, it's been a really interesting discussion. I think what's important, what's been discussed, is that we have to really separate fact from rhetoric from rumor, and a lot of it's going on right now. So with the immigration, we don't really know what's going to happen yet. And I think when you talk about immigration, I think it's important to realize this isn't just a Mexican issue. immigration to the U.S. is a worldwide issue, and we're dealing with people from all over the world that we have to really address. So that's important to really point out. And even when it comes to immigration, even the Mexican community, we have to kind of separate the Mexican community but what it really is. You have your Mexican Americans who have been here for two or three generations, but you'll have your legal immigrants, and then you have your immigrants who are not documented. So that's all, and they all have different aspects, different views on what's going on. But I think the thing about immigration, it really should be hard to be legalized or become a citizen here in the U.S., no matter where you come from.
It should be hard.
It shouldn't be easy. So I think people all appreciate that. But I think also people also realize the immigration as it stands right now just isn't working. I mean, there's some things that are in there, but it's a law that needs to be updated. And I think what kind of hurt on immigration, what's made it even more passionate, is that this is something that could have been taken care of 8 years ago. You know, you had a president with a veto-proof Congress that could have passed immigration reform, whether Republicans liked it or not, but it didn't get passed. And we ended up getting Obamacare, and look where that's led us to right now. So I think with immigration, I think it's going to be important when we do this is do it by step and try to avoid a big comprehensive type of plan, because when the government tries to do that, it tends to get messed up. So it's important that we take this as a step-by-step proposal, and I think there's some things that need to be done.
Well, so I'm curious what you think we need to be asking about the future of Mexican-American communities right now. Are questions about immigration what concern you the most?
Well, you know, it's interesting about immigration. If you look at the stats from the Pew Center, actually more Mexicans are going back home than coming over. So, again, that's another fact that people keep like to go out there and say that all the Mexicans are coming in and taking our jobs. But that's not necessarily true, because there's more actually that are going back to Mexico than coming in right now. And I think that's something that should be pointing out. And folks that come here, they tend to want to do jobs that Americans just don't want to do. I mean, you look at people, you know, we don't raise our kids now, which is kind of great. We raise our kids to be educated, raise our kids to be go get the jobs as lawyers, doctors, whatever. We don't really raise our kids now to go mow yards, to go pick fruit, but we need those jobs fulfilled. So I think it's important that we discuss that when we're talking about the immigration reform. We just had the young lady here talk about school. Great story. I mean, we have to have a way to really address that, because one thing about immigration, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and we have to look at the different people coming in. And so, you know, I'm on the board of the Statue of Liberty, and immigration has been an issue in the U.S. for years. Back when Lincoln was president, the rhetoric we're hearing about Mexicans coming over, you heard the same thing about the Germans. We've heard the same thing about Irish coming over. We've heard the same things about Italians coming over.
What does that tell us about either ourselves or these periods in history?
You know, I think it's human nature. And it's not just America. There's different parts of the world where this has happened, where people from different parts of the world have come into an existing society. And I think society likes to protect itself. And they see something new coming in that may affect their perceived way of life, people are going to resist it. But there's also good people that welcome newness, that welcome a new flavor coming in, because that really is a way of going. You know, I had a good friend of ours told me about, you know, about the American culture, that people talk about the melting pot. He goes, it really isn't a melting pot. It really is a stew. Because a stew, when you have a stew, a melting pot, everything melts into the same ingredient or the same dish. But a stew, it's where the carrots keep their identity. The meat keeps its identity, and I think we're really more of an American stew than an American melting pot. And I think we should welcome immigration, but we have to have a system where it's done legally and something that we can count on. And I think that's what's really confusing a lot of people. And what I've heard today, people are confused about what's going on, because you just can't figure out. People are always told to go back to the back of the line.
Well, this whole stew analogy, I wonder, you know, the idea of people retaining an identity that has to do with where they come from when they immigrate while also becoming part of American society. Do you think that that is an attitude that will maintain some sort of popularity or backing through a new administration and possible changes in policy? Or do you see the idea being somehow different?
I think people generally, what I've heard today, and just my travels throughout the country, people know we need immigration. Every great society has to have immigrants coming in here to actually kind of refreshen us about what we're doing. But we have to have the laws where people know how to address those laws and how to address the system in order for it to work. So right now we have not updated our immigration system in a couple decades, and we have to upgrade these things for them to work. And the one-size-fits-all analogy is not going to work, because right now immigration is really affecting the Mexican community, probably more than others. But that's now. 20 years from now, it may be a whole different community. And so whatever we do now with the sure is going to affect what we're going to do in the future.
When you talk about that people aren't raising their kids these days to mow lawns or pick fruit, and that immigrants, often immigrants from Mexico, are doing jobs like that, jobs that a lot of people born here don't want to do, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit more about how that plays out here in Kansas City.
When you look at Kansas City, I think a lot, I know my grandfather and that came over here, a lot of them came over for the meatpacking or for the railroad. And you got to look at different parts of the country, people have a different immigrant experience. In California, they tend to be more agricultural. In Kansas City, they tend to be more meatpacking in the Midwest and railroad. So it does affect different things. Now it's a lot of roofing, a lot of construction is coming over. So it is going to impact here. But I think people come here in Kansas City because it's Kansas City is when you look at Mexico, I don't think people necessarily want to come to the cold, but they come here. I think a lot of people come here for family and opportunity with what we listen to. And we got to give them a way to access the opportunity. But
Let me jump in. I have a question about how those industries that you just described, construction and meatpacking, are those industries preparing for change under a new administration, or at least anticipating some kind of change and thinking about how they might or might not need to adjust?
I think anybody in business always has to anticipate change, and you always have to anticipate any type of new administration coming in. What's interesting about the administration now, there really hasn't been announcements of what he's going to do about immigration. One thing has been said is that he's going to focus on criminals first, which is similar to what the Obama administration did. And what's also interesting when we talk about the administration is that the last administration deported more Mexicans than any other administration, than all the presidents combined in the 20th century. He deported more Mexicans than anybody else ever has, 2.5 million. And that didn't include the year 2016. So, it's easy to attack what's happening now without looking at the past, what could have happened and what has happened. So the last administration actually deported more Mexicans than anybody else ever has.
Jessica Piedra, as an immigration lawyer, what can you tell us about maybe what people misunderstand? I mean, we're just hearing that we're moving out of an administration that deported more Mexicans than any other administration had, and yet people are afraid of what's coming.
Yes, I mean, I will echo. We were, the immigrant rights community was very disappointed, really, with Obama. He failed to pass immigration reform when he did have the majority. And then the DACA program was not a gift. The immigrant students fought for that. And we really, that's why I have hope for the future, is that the immigrant students themselves organized and recruited immigration law scholars to design the program. And then they pushed for it. And so I think that's the future. These young, bright people, I know we talk a lot about manual labor, but some of my colleagues are very concerned about the technical visa that Mexicans are here on with the NAFTA treaty. There's special visas for professionals among us.
And you're seeing a lot of that in Kansas City?
Yes. Yes, especially because of, again, the railroad, and we are a direct shot from take I-35 directly south, and you get to Mexico. And so Kansas City is a huge trading partner with Mexico, is why we've seen, why we have our historic population. Like I said, we have 100 years back. I live in the West Side. I'm proud to be there with the folks that came here 100 years ago, and the newly arrived immigrants.
So visa holders, though, I mean, given all of the turmoil in airports around travel bans and visas not holding weight last weekend, are people concerned about those visas?
Yes. I mean, I've gotten lots of frantic calls from permanent residents and other folks that are terrified to visit Mexico because they are not sure they can come back. But that is not the case. That is only the 7 countries on the list.
Alfonso Navarro, any final thoughts before you head back to the Mexican consulate here in Kansas City?
Yes, I think you are. This is part of the effort that also the consulate is doing. We are addressing, obviously, the Mexican community in Spanish, but also given, for instance, the new demography, the DACA beneficiaries that are more fluent in both languages, we are also doing this outreach effort to different channels in order to also to have a larger communication with other sectors of the American society in this part of the country. So thank you very much.
Our time is sadly up. We'll definitely be staying on top of the issues we've been discussing today beyond this morning's program, so keep listening. Alfonso Navarro, Jessica Piedra, and Michael Barrera, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can listen back to this show at kcur.org/Central Standard and check out the conversation we had with members of Kansas City's Russian immigrant community while you're there. Tomorrow, how people connect and form community online. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Our intern is Caitlin Trout. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to date is next. Don't miss it.